What defines Ohio? A place that dares to go first and never looks back. There's no slowing us down. In Ohio, we're powering America, discovering breakthroughs, driving the future, propelling tomorrow. At Jobs Ohio, our mission is clear: strengthen job opportunities and empower Ohio's workforce. Ohio, our time is now. See Ohio's momentum at jobsohio.com/ohio's time.
Are you a questioner, a wanderer, or even a bit of a snooper? If so, then you'll feel right at home in Knoxville. We've got miles of trails to wander in our urban wilderness, award-winning eateries to satisfy your culinary cravings, cultural sites to open your mind, and dog-friendly activities that'll have everyone wagging. Knoxville, calling the curious. Learn more at visitknoxville.com.
It's just a poll. It's just a focus group. To Matt's point, we've lost all the nuance of this, of feelings and emotion, because we've got to run this poll. We have to run the TV commercial on the top testing message, even though it may be 0.1%. And then we have to test that ad with Kamala Harris. She spent $70 million testing ads. Again, because we're the smart people, right? So, yep. Like, we have to get back to some old school campaign. And I think if we really want to turn the corner on working folks.
We're going to jump right in and start talking about things. Joining us today is our good friend. You've seen him on this podcast before, Chuck Rocha. Chuck has also, you know, been seen all over the web and all over television, and he's everywhere.
Wanted posters, and you can just go on, like, mainly wanted posters.
Yes. Well, we got rid of the wanted posters. We put those in the, we burned those. But hey, guys, welcome to Trailblaze today. How you doing?
Good to be here. I thought spring had sprung in D.C., and it was colder than a well digger's ass this morning when I got up to ride my bicycle to the gym.
A well digger's ass. That's interesting. Place to know about. It's, so,
it's cold there. It's working people, Jamal. That's who we need to be talking to.
Yes, yes, yes. So that's good. Chuck, it's good to see you, man. And you're wearing the hat. You know, I always love it when the hat's here.
Absolutely. You know, as us bald guys, we have solidarity around trying to keep our heads protected from the sun in the summer and warm in the winter.
Absolutely. All right. So a lot's going on right now. I think we saw this week, if we get into it, I think we saw this week there was a big special election on Tuesday, and a lot of people are drawing a lot of inferences from the special election. We've had a bunch of them over the course of the last year or so that have shown the numbers moving in Democrats' directions. But Chuck, you spend a lot of time out here working on campaigns currently. Just tell us, what do you think when you interpret these results?
I would caution Democrats that it's good, but it's not as good as you think it is. And let the Democrat here throw a little water on the fire, is that as we've talked about, there's three big words that are missing from every piece of analysis that's happened with every special election so far. What you've been hearing is Democrats are overperforming 10 points, 15 points, and against Marjorie Taylor Greene, they overperformed 23 points. All true, but the missing three words that all you Democrats need to keep in mind is of people that voted. And what that means is that it's not the same turnout. It's not the same people. It is apples and oranges. Are we showing a lot of energy? Absolutely. Are we going to win a bunch of races in 26? Absolutely. But don't get so full of yourself that you think you've got it all figured out, because what's happening is you're not moving a bunch of folks from Republican to Democrats. You're getting a bunch of Democrats who are showing up at a higher level than has been perceived, and a bunch of Republicans who are staying their ass at home. Two points of examples is I spent a lot of time.
But don't
with
we want that? But Chuck, don't we want Democrats who haven't been showing up? Don't we want them to show up? Isn't that part
it
of
ain't
the
who haven't
problem?
Been showing up, Jamal? It's they've showed up in the off year and they're showing up to vote in a special. And for a midterm election, you want that energy. That's the positive that I spoke of, because a midterm election is about who you can motivate. Because about 35% of the electorate that votes in a presidential election, I'm getting nerdy for all you damn nerds.
Do it.
About
35%
of all the folks who vote. About 35% of those people don't come back in an off-year election. Mm. That's an average. In Wisconsin, it's better. In Texas, it's worse. But on average nationwide, about 35% of the electorate stays home in an off-year election. So this energy that we have is a great thing, Jamal. But all I'm cautioning all of you Democrats is that you don't see the same amount of folks showing up. Will Republicans show up in the 2026 election? We don't know that. We can take the averages. The one thing that I would draw your attention to is a place like Texas and the March primaries. Two things happened there that were astronomical, and I'm not just talking about me getting to do some work for Tallarico. I'm talking about 30% of Democratic primary voters who voted in that primary, Matt, had no voting history of ever voting in a Democratic primary. That's amazing news for us. And the second point, and I'll stop, is that of the folks that showed up in that primary, 12% of them had a history of voting in the Republican primary. Those are two numbers that you can draw something from to say something different is happening.
And do you think that that's a function of anti-Trump sentiment, or is that something sort of Tallarico and kind of the magnetism that Tallarico is showing? He does seem like he is one of these kind of newer, younger candidates who, quite frankly, is a very good communicator. And he is really good at motivating people. And he's got a very positive message, and he seems to have done a really excellent job. And I would compare him more to a Mamdani than, say, a traditional Democratic politician who could potentially be on the ticket in 28.
It was a combination of both. He's a really good candidate. He's really different than what folks in Texas have seen sitting around quoting Bible scriptures, talking about we should be loving our neighbor, not hating each other. Like that. When is the last time you heard a Democrat talk like that? So, A, he's very different. I call him being the perfect candidate at a perfect point in time. But then also in Texas, I'll remind both of you that I worked for Ann Richards back in the early 90s, and it was the last time Democrats really had an operation statewide, and we won a bunch of elections back then. But for the last 32 years since Ann, Republicans have controlled almost every facet of government in Texas and every statewide elected. So if you're a man or a woman who've come of age just like us three, we're all in the middle of our lives, we're all in our 50s. Let's think about that scenario in Texas. If you God started willing, when you were 20 voting, stay with me, Jamal, and now you're 50 and your buddy Matt Butler's running for county judge, guess what? Even though Matt's a common sense Republican, he ain't really MAGA, he's dang sure not a Democrat, but he's the middle of the road guy. He's running in a Republican primary because it's the only primary to run in. So that's why I think part of that 12% are folks going, oh, we actually have an option here. I've been voting in Republican primaries because that's the only game in town. And what I'm giving y'all are some hard facts, but it's just what's been happening in Texas.
Yeah, we talked last week about the Democrats and the job that they are doing and other organizations are doing, getting Democrats to register in absolutely positively every race they can, up ballot and down ballot. You know, I think we mentioned South Carolina having 124 candidates in all 124 legislative districts, which I think is a great thing to show for the energy. And I think similar things have been happening in Texas as well.
For the first time ever in like 20, 30 years, they have somebody opposing every single Republican state legislator.
Yeah, that's great news.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Look, I'm God willing, we're in the middle of our lives. Hopefully, this is not the last quarter.
I said middle of your life. 50-year-old's middle.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I had a friend, a doctor, who said, yeah, you know, I'm in middle age. And like the doctor looks at me and goes, how long do you think you're going to live?
Exactly. I was reading this week from our good friend Liz Smith did an interview that I thought was kind of interesting because she talked a lot about the candidates that are working out there. I mean, obviously, Mamdani is one of them in New York. He's got a particularly New York flavor on it. But and I think Tallarico also was one. What they do that's similar is they talk to real people's concerns. They talk in real ways. They're willing to be vulnerable. They're willing to make mistakes. They're willing to say things that other people aren't willing to say. Unlike the candidates that we all grew up either working for or trying to advise and the consultants that we knew, who the whole point of, you know, campaigns was discipline, right? All the time. You had to be disciplined and on message and don't keep your hair in place and don't mess it up. And that is actually counter to what people are looking for right now.
You couldn't be more right. Yeah, you couldn't be more right. The Washington Post have wrote an article about this about 2 months ago, and it was called The Rise of the Gruff Candidate, of the Working Man, Johnny Joe Lunchpail, I would like to call him, right? Because Democrats are so desperate to try to figure out a way to reconnect with working class folks is they're like, well, we're going to get this groups of oyster farmers and Teamsters and firefighters and public school teachers like James or others who can better connect. And that is one piece of the puzzle. And I think we've done a great job at getting those imperfect candidates who have a few more scrapes or scars on them, unlike what we saw as when we were growing up in campaigns, it had to be this certain way. What worries me is this, and I've talked about this in reports, and that is the groups of senior consultants, and I know we'll get to this in the presidential, those groups of folks really haven't changed over the last 20 or 30 years, and it's the same group of well-meaning, good Democrats, but they know one way to run a campaign, and it's the point you said. It's like putting bubble wrap around folks. They don't want them to have press conferences. They don't want them to be out there too far. They want to really protect them, which all of you girls and boys who want to be campaign operatives, that's not a bad strategy, and that's you want to protect your candidate, but in the new age of social media, folks want to look to see what's relatable. Folks have stepped to me and said, Chuck, what's the secret and the connection between James Tallarico, Ruben Gallego, and Bernie Sanders, all three who you were senior advisors to, who've done really well with working people, really good with Latinos, and have overperformed. And I said, it's because they're authentic enough to where people believe them, and then they spent the money to deliver a message where these folks are consuming information. And with Latinos, it's very complicated. It's bilingual. It's streaming. It's lots of things. Of like, that's how you start getting things that are different than your campaign in a box that we've all seen every party committee run from here to eternity, which, again, is not bad. But we have to move and evolve in the way that campaigns have moved and evolved if we're ever going to keep up with somebody like a Donald Trump, who's just blasting us through a megaphone things that sound a lot. Why I joined the Democratic Party in 1990, which was draining the swamp, bringing jobs back like I had in a tire factory in East Texas, and figuring out like how to put America first and rebuild manufacturing. All that spoke to my heart as a Dick Gephardt Democrat. This is the part Democrats have to do to get those folks back.
Yeah, and I also think the one thing, in addition to being in the bubble wrap, is the poll-tested messaging and
That
every single word is exactly right. And it really strikes as, you know what? You don't actually believe anything here. You're just going to believe what the pollsters are telling you. This is what your position on this issue. And we've got to get away from that.
You know, so, people can
sniff out that inauthenticity. Yeah. And it is toxic right now. So toxic.
That's right. And you know what I've seen? I've seen this happen with a few different candidates in the party. You may have seen this, Chuck, where people go out and do these, whether it's town halls or they want to take questions at the end of a fundraiser. And they'll, you know, the audience will submit the questions in advance, or the host will tell you, here are the two or three questions that you're going to get. So the candidates are out here kind of practicing their answers on these particular topics and then going out and delivering them in whatever canned way it is that they're supposed to. But it's almost like they're fighting oil cans, right? Like they think that they're winning, right? They think that they're getting practice and engaging with people. But like a boxer who's just fighting like some oil can boxer that nobody is, you know, you can just get punched up on, they're not actually getting better. And so one of the things I always want to tell candidates is take those risks early when nobody's paying attention. You play preseason ball for a reason, because you want to get banged up. You want to figure out whether or not the three-pointer works or the fouls or the foul line is, you know, sucks or whatever it is you got to do. You want to figure that out in preseason so that you can build a campaign plan for the actual campaign in the campaign year that's going to work. And when you're like out here kind of cutting corners and cheating it a little bit, you're not actually getting better.
That's exactly right. And you bring up a great point. And I was thinking about it with the ad testing that Matt brought up, is that think about the campaigns that I just described to you, not Tallarico, not Ruben, but these new candidates, the firefighter, the oyster farmer, the truck stop, whatever, you know, those guys and women out there in Wisconsin who run like this. So if you're that new candidate, and you're coming into this space, you're super reliant on somebody like one of us three who've been in that meeting, right? Who've said, we've got to put together a message, come up with the win number, come up with something that we can drive in, and we can win this thing. And what's the winning strategy? Well, those candidates are super reliant on that consultant class that are around them. That's mainly driven by your polling firm and your media firm, who consume most of the money, figure out what that top testing message, to Matt's point, is, even though they may have only talked to a couple hundred people. But because they're so reliant on those polling firms, and that missed, and this is not a knock on them. This is just saying how those candidates are over-reliant. And then as Democrats, we are the smart party. We care about people. We want to make sure we do it right. We've got all these tech folks. We know how to do the testing and the modeling and persuasion modeling, turnout modeling. But we get too cute plus two. When I've told these firefighters and other folks that are running, like, you know more about working people than this group of consultants you have around you will ever know. They'll look at a poll. They'll make a great guess estimate. They'll get pretty close, if not right on. But it's just a poll. It's just a focus group. To Matt's point, we've lost all the nuance of this, of feelings and emotion, because we've got to run this poll. We have to run the TV commercial on the top testing message, even though it may be 0.1%. And then we have to test that ad with Kamala Harris. She spent $70 million testing ads. Again, because we're the smart people, right? So, yep. Like, we have to get back to some old school campaign, and I think we really want to turn the corner on working folks.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I was looking at the campaign for Mary Petola up in Alaska, and it's great. She talks about fighting for fish, family, and freedom, right? Because her family were fish farmers. And, you know, she gets out of Congress, and she goes back up to Alaska and gets ready to dress the fish for the season and figuring all that out. You know, a real person. And the thing, you know, I guess I'm on a little bit of a horse about this. I want these candidates who are real, living real lives, spending time with people, having the problems that people are having, or at least they have family members who are having those problems and friends, and they're willing to get up and tell the story and not just be kind of tight about it. Tell the story about what it's like when you go in and, you know, the grocery bill is $25 more than what you expected when you got in line, and you're trying to figure out, do you have enough money in the account to actually cover, you know, this credit card bill that you're about to make. I feel like we don't have enough people who are really talking like that.
Yeah, I was writing something down here that said this economic anxiety, which is the term I've been using with lots of my candidates, is, think of it as the earth. You have, this is the middle of your universe, is everything focuses around making those bills day to day. Democrats, lots of consultants, lots of candidates, lots of folks in our hierarchy of, y'all know the power brokers. I'm not going to mention them here. Again, good, good people, smart, smart people. They have spent a lot of time in the last few years taking on Donald Trump, because Donald Trump has been so horrible around some basic freedoms of democracy, civil rights, things that all of us have cut our teeth on, whether it was the labor movement, the civil rights movement, everybody on this call with what you and Matt have done. We've all been friends for over 30 years. We've all been in these rooms. But now we've talking to voters about democracy and civil rights when they're just trying to figure out how we're going to make rent this month and how much this gas going up a dollar is going to cost me in my paycheck, which goes back to my days in the 90s and 80s and David Bonnier and Gephardt, and everybody was kind of like centered in that message around workers. We have to get back to centering our message here, because we've been the one, we're horrible at talking about it, but we've been the one who've been fighting for overtime for workers, fighting for rights at work with a union, making sure. I said this on Twitter this morning because I was aggravated that the DNC is meeting today in New Orleans, and they're going to talk about Israel and Gaza, and they're going to talk about super PACs. That's the two things on the agenda. When I said, why don't we come out of this meeting instead of talking about foreign relations and other things and talk about shit costing too much and America needing a raise? Right. These two things I used to campaign on in 1998. And now they're back in a bigger way, where you have this economic anxiety, and I'll stop here. But then with Latino voters, for example, you have this cloud. And for those of you watching online, I'm giving visuals here, so pay attention. This is the economic anxiety. But then you lay over it things like the ICE detentions for Latinos, where we were okay with them deporting. Even Chuck Rocha was. Deport criminals. If you come here and you want to, you have a crime and I am the civil rights Latino, whatever, yeah, deport them. But most Latinos were with me. But if you've come here and the only law you've ever broken was coming here to seek freedom and try to make a living in the fabric of America, you shouldn't be deported. You should find a way for them to become citizens. They're already paying taxes. Like, that's what these Latinos didn't sign up for. That's why you see the big shift with Latino voters is you have this economic anxiety. They're the most hit by it because they're on average of 15 years younger than a white and black voter. And then you lay over Donald Trump and others in their neighborhood locking up the local guy down at the taco shop, or somebody trying to clean up somebody's yard who's never broken a law other than coming here to seek freedom.
Yeah, and Matt, I mean, you know, we've talked about this. I don't know how, if you're worried about gas prices, milk and bread prices, figuring out your child care, trying to get your, you know, hold on to your job, all those things, and then we're attacking other Americans. How is it that all, and then we're attacking, we're having a war overseas that nobody signed up for, and we're going to spend $1 trillion to fight that, and not, and then we're going to cut basic services here. But yet we're still going after each other because the people who are in charge think it's better for us to be fighting each other over DEI or immigration or whatever it is they've come up with as the boogeyman of the week, because they want us fighting each other instead of looking at the people in power who are making choices that aren't actually benefiting the people who are out here living their lives in America.
Absolutely. And deep diving those choices. I think I saw a stat that you could fund Mamdani's city-run grocery stores for 800 years just in the money that we have spent in 4 weeks of war with Iran. That's a choice. That is a choice that the government has made. And that's a bad choice. And we need to really focus in on that.
And look, I'm going to say this. I said this the other night, and we can talk about something else. But it's true. America can be a great country. America can do great things. We just sent people far away in space as we've ever sent people in the history of the planet. America can do great things. We can win a war. Our military is unrivaled. We can, like, you know, bomb people to smithereens and, you know, come out of it with, you know, with that victory. The question for us is, can we be a good country?
Yep.
Right. Can we use all that power to do good things that are going to help real people in real ways to make them live better lives? And that is the question on the table right now, which is, you know, okay, yeah, America, make America great. America's been great. America can be great. But can America be good? Will America be good? We've done it in the past. Will we do it again?
Right. America has been exceptional. American exceptionalism is a real thing, but it is earned. It is not, there's no entitlement. We are not just like sort of inherently exceptional. And we have not been behaving as an exceptional nation.
You can do exceptionally good things.
Last year.
And you can make exceptional mistakes.
Well, that's true. Yeah.
You know, like, that's the question.
To put a button on this piece, I'll tell you this about the way that the voters are looking at it. It's very different than I've seen over my 35-year career of running campaigns, and I've lived through many wars and how people react to them.
Yeah.
I still work very closely with Vote Vets, who is a great organization, right, with John Soltz, our friend, and a lot of folks over there. I was at a town hall with him and Ruben in San Antonio a couple weeks ago with 300 Latino veterans. It was really eye-opening and very humbling for a kid like me who never served. My granddaddy was in World War II. And listening to these veterans talking about war, you know, really sat with me. And then when I would go and talk to voters, and we're working in lots of other Senate races and House races across the country, I don't think I've ever seen an American electorate that's just could get, and I said this on TV last night and took blowback from a Republican. I said, people just don't give a shit anymore. Like, unless it affects them and somebody dropped, and I don't, God forbid, but something happens on our homeland. They know Iran is a bad thing. They even think that they're terrorists. They think all the things, but that's not their, even in their top five of what's going on in their decision-making in their life right now. They want to serve. They're very patriotic. They support the troops. They support America. But right now, when you say what's on your mind, it starts with utility bills. Normally goes to gas. Then it goes to healthcare premiums. And then it goes to all the different groceries that have went up double in the last 2 years. That's what people tell me every day. And they can't all be wrong when every one of them are focused on that. And I think that's the overplay that's going to cost Republicans, not the 10-seat majority that folks think, but that damn number moving to 20 and 25.
What defines Ohio? A place that dares to go first and never looks back. There's no slowing us down. In Ohio, we're powering America, discovering breakthroughs, driving the future, propelling tomorrow. At Jobs Ohio, our mission is clear. Strengthen job opportunities and empower Ohio's workforce. Ohio, our time is now. See Ohio's momentum at jobsohio.com/Ohio's time.
Are you a questioner, a wanderer, or even a bit of a snooper? If so, then you'll feel right at home in Knoxville. We've got miles of trails to wander in our urban wilderness, award-winning eateries to satisfy your culinary cravings, cultural sites to open your mind, and dog-friendly activities that'll have everyone wagging. Knoxville, calling the curious. Learn more at visitknoxville.com.
Boom.
Chuck, we're talking about kind of young communicators and with a new style and really being able to use social media. My concern about the current Democratic primary field is the people who are sort of at the top of that tier are people who've been around for quite a while. I don't know that they can communicate and certainly can't learn. I don't think anybody can learn to communicate like Mamdani or Tallarico in the next 18 months. So is there a crop of people coming up who can are going to be there in time? Like, I'm just worried that some of these kind of younger folks are just, they're just like a cycle behind. And so let's start talking about 2028, kind of who the candidates are for 2028. And you know, are there people that you see, you know, who are maybe not the Gavin Newsom, Kamala Harris, and kind of these big names that you hear a lot or leading polls or prediction markets, you know, who's down there? You should certainly mention Ruben Gallego. So.
Yeah, and I think that you're right. And, you know, I draw people's attention to the op-ed that David Plouffe wrote this week in the New York Times around how the campaigns have to change to almost be a full-time content creation machine. Like Mondani, use this, and it is smart. But that's one spoke, and I totally agree with David, that any campaigns that I have now, there's somebody who's following your candidate around with a video machine. I know I'm old. It's a video machine. I know. I just call it a video machine. Putting them on the internet every day.
Put them in their VCR.
Yeah, they put them internet machines out there on the internets, and they get out there to the peoples. And so this is real. And to Matt's point, folks can catch up quickly. It used to be the way me and Matt think about this right now and the way he worded that question of, you have these old heads. But now these old heads, even like the governor of California, and his memes and his content creation team have made him become this end all be all just because they're making content that Democrats are hungry to see somebody hitting Donald Trump in the face, you know, or at least hitting him with a mean meme. Right. So I think the candidates who can do that the best have the best chance, Matt, to actually catch up and to be thrust to the top. Open record here. I worked for Ruben Gallego. I've worked for him for many, many years. He's one of my best friends. And he's been very good to me. And Ruben, a Marine, a former House member, you know, he understood that he wanted to break through and communicate a special message. He's a Marine. He's a working class guy. He's bilingual, like leaning into those strengths so you can get that message to folks who won't always just be the Pritzker or always be the Pennsylvania governor. Right. I think that's where you pick and choose your battles, like this war, like, Ruben is a very special messenger around the war because Ruben has been to war. And then you learn that he was in the infantry. He had a gun in his hand. He was shooting at people and people were shooting at him. And he watched some of his best friends die next to him in combat, which sounds right now like very heavy. But that's the kind of messaging you want from somebody who says, I've been to war. I've seen what it cost me and my best friend who I watched die. War has consequences. And then doing that, Matt, to your point, with a videographer, with somebody who can post about it, sitting in front of flags saying, this has got real cost to people. That's why we wanted to do the town hall in San Antonio with Vote Vets to kind of bring light to that issue. And then each candidate, if you're Buttigieg or you're somebody else, find that issue where you can break through, where you can be that voice that folks want to hear, because presidential campaigns are still about two things. They're about money and votes. And money usually equates to votes, but in a presidential, you can ride some vibes from and peak and come down. Like I lived through the 2020 primary and it was crazy and I still have the scars on my head from it. But the key to the guys that you spoke of, the old people that have been around a while, if they're smart, like the governor of California, smart politically, is they've been building an online fundraising juggernaut for years. Would they raise $5 million? And y'all know this, they take that $5 million, they invest it right back into it. So next time they can do seven. And that builds like a snowball. And me and Matt Jamal have lots of really close friends who do this digital fundraising and are really good at it. And those are the ones to watch. And there's only a handful of those firms that are really good. And those are the ones who are building the infrastructure who will rise above the rest. AOC's in that category because of her fundraising. Pritzker's there because he's got money. No peso, no say-so when it comes to presidential campaigns.
I love that.
Yeah, but I do think you need a really strong message to go behind that excellent digital operation.
Yes,
right?
So like we saw this. Let me interrupt you, Matt. It's the part I was talking about as I argue this with Mike Madrid all the time. The message matters, but if you're not authentic about it, it don't matter.
For sure. No, no. And I certainly, when I say message, I do not mean what the words that are coming out of your mouth are. I mean, having core values that you are then able to talk about and communicate about clearly, and so that you are an authentic messenger on that, and stuff that other people believe in, and so that that's going to give you that wave. So
yeah, look, you know, yeah, and I'll tell you as the comms guy, like on this meeting, on this podcast,
comms guys always got to jump in here and tell us what we got wrong.
No, not at all. But you know, the first thing people always say when they hire a comms guy, they want communication strategy. Okay, they're just trying to think about what my press release is going to look like. What's my speech going to be? What are my talking points? But they're like two steps before that. The first question is, what do you believe? Yeah. Right? What do you want to see exist in the world that doesn't currently exist? What do you want to change? What are the things that are core to you? What are your values? Then we go from your values. Then we go to, okay, now what are you going to do about it? Right? Like, what's your plan to do something about the things you think are important? And right. Then when we get done with all of that, we can start talking about what you're going to say about it. But a lot of people don't want to do that early work, or they don't know the answers to those questions.
Right.
And they get scared when you start asking them questions about what they believe and what they want to do. And so they just start, you know, duffing it off to get to the, but what about my speech? My speech sucks. You know, like, yeah, your speech sucks because you don't want to say anything important.
Yeah.
I think Matt hit something really important while ago, is that this 2028 presidential is going to be different than anything we've ever seen. Gone are the days of putting out a press release and going and having a speech.
Like, right.
That's great. And go have your rally and go do your thing. But nobody gives a shit. Like, this is a new age of how to campaign, back to the Plouffe piece, right? And I've given Plouffe plenty of shit. And I'm giving him his flowers. Like, I'm open opportunity shit talker. And when he talked about having a content creator, his content is king. My wife, who's one of the smartest people I know, who has to put up with my shit every day, she says to me a lot of times, she goes, yeah, I can't
evidence,
keep up.
That evidence that maybe she's not as smart as we think she is, because right. She does put up with
certain things.
huge empathy. Huge empathy.
That's huge right. Empathy, right?
She's smart, she's blind and empathetic, right?
And she's blind and in
generous,
her left
generous
eye.
Generous to the elderly.
And she's blind in her left eye, and I try to stay on her left side so she can't see me either. I'm joking. That's a joke. So what she says is like, I can't keep up with all the shit that you're doing, Chuck. Like, you're doing too much content. Like, you've got a podcast today, tomorrow you're on CNN, today you're doing this thing. Because I'm like, I have to feed the machine, and mm-hmm. I'm the consultant. I'm not even the candidate, right?
Right.
And because I'm building a brand for me and my firm and my candidates, right? And for a guy who never went to college, who's got a criminal record, and who was a teenage father, I live with a constant chip on my shoulder where I feel like I have to outwork, and me and Jamal's talked about this, where I got to be in three different more places to make up for all the white boys I got to compete against,
yeah.
Whose mom and daddy were lawyers or whoever, right? And yeah. So think about that. If I feel that way, how does that candidate running for Congress in the Texas Valley feel of getting noticed and getting content out there where folks will even watch? So I think that's the new age. And then think of that on the presidential scale, which becomes this giant thing, man. We're nerds.
No, yeah. It does become a giant thing. And you know, you mentioned something a minute ago. You talked about people who were the kind of the people to watch who are signing up with some of these candidates. Who are some of those people to watch and candidates that you know who are picking up staff right now? We'd like to follow and track people who are getting jobs and getting contracts and, you know, who's going to be helpful to picking the 2028 campaigns.
Well, there's no doubt that all of these guys are looking at. Let me back up. And I think you talked about it the other day on your podcast. I am a regular listener, by the way, is that you have these big firms. You have the SKDKs, you have the GMMBs, you've got Ace and Juan out in California with the California governor. You've got, now you have the Fight Agency, you have my firm Solidarity. You have these big firms that have run presidential campaigns, and they've already got their horses because they were working for them for governor. You know, you had mentioned your brother at SKDK.
Mm-hmm.
Doug
Thornell.
Yeah, Doug.
Yeah.
And Doug, you know, Doug's been working for Moore. And if Moore gets in this, Doug's not going anywhere else. I mean, they've become friends, and I've talked to Doug about Wes Moore, and I love Wes Moore. It's the same, right? And if you look at Ace and Juan Rodriguez out in California, you know, they've run every statewide out there, and they were Kamala's consultant even, but they had to make a choice, just like some of these digital fundraising firms have to make a choice. You're working for multiple people of who they're with, right? So I've heard, and two or three of these campaigns have called me. You know, I'm one of 25 people probably living today who's run a presidential campaign. And I'll be loyal to Ruben, and I'll work for Ruben, and I'm not going to work for anybody else until Ruben decides he's not going to run. He hasn't made his decision yet. So out of loyalty. But I know that people like Ro Khanna and folks like that, Ro is pulling together a lot of the old Bernie 16 team, you know, and talking to lots of them and bringing them on board as thought leaders to help him think about how he could be involved in helping folks run who are running for Congress in places and Senate. I've told most of those folks the way to have a lot of political savviness around you is to go now in 26 and endorse a lot of House and Senate people and go campaign with them and build friendships, because they will owe you, literally owe you. And I know that sounds like the quid pro quo, if I use that word right, but that's how politics works. That's what Gavin Newsom is doing. That's why you see Kelly giving money to folks when he got all that money he raised, because Donald Trump, he attacked him and then he attacked back and then he raised a bunch of money. It's positioning yourself politically now. If there's going to be 20 people running, what makes you different? I just talked about Ruben, and Ruben's got a great profile, bilingual, Marine, pulled himself up from nothing. Ruben comes from nothing like lots of folks and has literally lived the American dream. That's a storyline. And you can raise money, you can run a campaign on that. But these other folks like Pritzker, I kind of have a top tier, which is the Pennsylvania governor, the Illinois governor, the California governor, Kentucky somewhat. Mm-hmm. And then you have, and I put Ruben in there because his profile, and West because they're these military guys, and probably Buttigieg. But they, all of those folks have built some kind of an apparatus to raise money. Yeah. That way you can go talk to people. Folks, and I'll finish with this. People give me a lot of credit around Bernie Sanders, and I wrote a whole book called T.O. Bernie about how this happened. And it wasn't that Bernie was a great messenger, but Matt, he was a great messenger, and he stayed on message for 30 years, whether you liked him or not. So right. He had the authenticity, right? But then what folks forget is that we spent $200 million on TV, mail, and field. Like, we ran a real modern campaign while having a robust distributed organizing program where thousands of people, y'all, were calling voters in Iowa, calling voters in New Hampshire, calling voters in Spanish in Nevada. You couple fundraising, a message, and money, then you can really, really win a presidential campaign.
Yeah. So you mentioned Bernie, and you know, this, that incredible machine you guys did create. And, you know, I'm sure there is still a giant email list left over from that. There is a ton of energy in sort of that wing of the Democratic Party. You know, you mentioned Ro Khanna. I mean, we also, the next most kind of obvious kind of heir to that would be AOC. But outside of AOC and Ro, is there anybody that's kind of has a chance to be able to capture some of those people, some of that momentum that you see outside of those two?
Nobody has spent the time and money to cultivate their fundraising grassroots list like those two. Nobody even comes remotely close. And full disclosure, we worked for AOC in her congressional race for many years. It worked for her last cycle. She's a great person. Whatever she decides to do, she's going to do wonderful, whether she runs for the Senate, stays in her House seat. A lot of people think she'll run for Senate. A lot of folks don't think Chuck Schumer is going to seek reelection, but a lot can happen between them. But she has an amazing fundraising list that would, if you were to ask me, Matt, it probably matches up to Bernie Sanders' list, apples to apples. The size may not be there, but there's a lot of folks who were on the 20 campaign now, including her chief of staff, who was our comm staffer, who's over there. Her campaign manager was the Iowa state political director for me in the caucuses. Like, so you can see how the teams are interwoven. And then Ro Khanna has been working with Jeff Weaver for years, and has a lot of those folks from the media firms that we had worked with in 16 that are over there. So you really see folks already, to your point, Jamal, making moves to position themselves to be with the progressive, if they're progressives, or with whoever, right? And so I think that's where the fundraising is different. I don't see anybody close to what AOC and Ro Khanna have built as far as a national profile, a national list, and have been like hiring professionals around them. So if they decide to do this, they're ready.
It's important business. Chuck, I'm going to thank you for joining us. It's always fun to talk to you. We could do this for like 3 more hours, but I guess they're not going to let us do that here in America.
Matt said that I could send an invoice. I just need to know where that invoice has to be addressed to. So
I'm a media mogul. Go somewhere and have a good time.
Yeah. I don't know if you watch the famous Gemstones, but Baby Billy, I'm a lot like Baby Billy, and I'm a media mogul, and my time ain't for free. So y'all just send me a check over some tickets to a baseball game. No, it's good. Seeing y'all.
I'll pay him brown liquor next time I see you.
Nice. Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
All right. I could do this every week. We should make it a regular thing. It's so good to see you. And you know what? I'm going to say this in closing.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, I've been doing this for 36 years, and you two guys have been two of the best friends I've had in this work, and not in campaigns.
when the old saying that Albert Morales says a lot is like, if you want a friend in D.C., buy a dog.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't have to buy a dog. I've had you two dogs by my side, and I appreciate our friendship.
Well, in fairness, I'm going to say this, because it's not just us, and because I don't want to overplay that, but I think that that's important. But we do have kind of a group of friends, a group of people who I think have known each other for a long time, been around each other for a long time. We don't talk to each other every day or every week, but you know when you need people, who to call, where to call, and who's going to show up. And I think that that is something, if there are young people out there who are listening and not just a bunch of old farts like us, is the people who are good to you, stay good to them. Stay good to them.
Yep.
Because they're going to be around. Nobody's going anywhere in this life. And you never know when you just need somebody to buy you a cocktail and listen to you.
I tell kids every day, I say, your network is your currency. Your network is, you want to know how to make it in DC? Build a network that have other people that will help you. I've hired, trained, and mentored 136 young brown and black kids in my firm. And I tell every one of them, come to every happy hour, meet everybody, figure out who's an asshole and don't talk to them no more, and make as many friends as you can.
The first rule of business I got from our good friend Mark Steets, if people remember Mark Steets, who was a big consultant in Democratic politics, he said, no assholes. Don't hire them. Don't work for them. that's a great piece of advice. That's a great piece of advice.
What defines Ohio? A place that dares to go first and never looks back. There's no slowing us down. In Ohio, we're powering America, discovering breakthroughs, driving the future, propelling tomorrow. At Jobs Ohio, our mission is clear: strengthen job opportunities and empower Ohio's workforce. Ohio, our time is now. See Ohio's momentum at jobsohio.com/Ohio's time.
Are you a questioner, a wanderer, or even a bit of a snooper? If so, then you'll feel right at home in Knoxville. We've got miles of trails to wander in our urban wilderness, award-winning eateries to satisfy your culinary cravings, cultural sites to open your mind, and dog-friendly activities that'll have everyone wagging. Knoxville, calling the curious. Learn more at visitknoxville.com.
Spring is sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save